Vision Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
Number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just?
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I'll be your host for today. We would like to acknowledge that CKUT is located on unceded Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabeg, Abenaki, and Mohawk territories. The Kanyukahaga Nation is recognized as the custodians of the lands and waters on which we gather today. Jajaki, Montreal is historically known as a gathering place for many First Nations. Today, it is home to a diverse population of Indigenous and other peoples. We respect the continued connections with the past, present, and future and our ongoing relationships with Indigenous and other peoples within the Montreal community. Today's show picks up where our last show left off, discussing violence and the use of force against inmates inside prison walls, the processes that one must exhaust within the correctional institution before the complaint can begin to be considered by outside processes. In addition to systemic anti-Black racism and, in Quebec, anti-English discrimination within the prison walls as well. We're going to focus on the story of Christophe Lewis, and that was mentioned in our last show, and the abuse and assault that he faced within prison walls inside a federal correctional institution in Ontario, and the case against some of the, at least one of the correctional officers that assaulted him. We will, to speak to this issue, we'll feature an interview with Christophe's lawyer, Alexandra Paquette. Alexandra Paquette is a practicing lawyer in Quebec and across Canada. She practices criminal law, specifically prison law, and she focuses on transgender inmates. That's one of her specializations. She successfully transferred several transgender inmates to different institutions than they were originally assigned, and made new law in doing so. And she's been representing Christophe with regard to their case that's ongoing. In a Toronto Star article that was published on June 8th, 2021, by Alicia Hashem, entitled "Inmate Releases Video of Unprovoked Assault by Guards at Ontario Prison, asks OPP to investigate. A 5.5-minute security camera video shows guards pepper spraying and restraining inmate Christophe Lewis during a 2012 incident. The attack on me was unprovoked and vicious, Lewis said Friday. And so in this article, for our listeners that do have access to the internet, if you type in the Toronto Star and Christoph Lewis, you should be able to find the article. And this article actually has a link to the video footage. And I want to just put a warning out there that it is disturbing and does contain images that of systemic racial discrimination. There's every correctional officer, from what I can tell in this video, that assaults Christoph is white and Christoph is black. So just wanted to put that out there as a trigger warning to anybody who might actually be able to go and look this up and watch the video. And so just want to please take care if that is something that you're intending to do. And I recommend that to anybody who does have access to the internet, because when you see this, you'll see the overwhelming amount of officers assaulting Christoph all at the same time. And I'm just going to read a few paragraphs at the beginning of this article, and then we're going to turn over to our feature interview with Alexandra Paquette, who is currently Christoph Lewis's lawyer, or one of the people on the legal team that Prison Radio Show spoke with last week. So, a federal inmate is asking police to investigate a group of correctional officers for what he says was an unprovoked assault captured on video inside Millhaven Prison near Kingston. Christoph Lewis, so 36 at the time this article came out, this was 2 years ago, released a video of the 2012 incident at a Friday news conference. According to his account, the incident began after he objected to being strip searched by a female prison guard and a verbal argument took place. The 5.5 minute security camera video, which does not have sound, appears to show Lewis being told to stand in a corner as he's surrounded by at least 7 correctional officers. As Lewis is speaking, an officer suddenly pepper sprays him in the face. The officers then converge on Lewis, who said they began beating and kicking him. At one point in the video, shows two officers putting an arm around Lewis's neck in what he described as a chokehold, what a warden's report called variations of a headlock maneuver that left him unable to breathe. At the end of the video clip, Lewis is restrained with his hands behind his back and led away. The attack on me was unprovoked and vicious, Lewis said in a recording played at a press conference Friday by his advocates and his then-lawyer Sylvie Bordelais. There was no de-escalation tactics employed. And this goes on to talk about the process that Christoph put into place. And that's something that we are going to discuss in our interview with Alexandra Paquette, one of the lawyers on his current legal team. So I wanted to welcome Alexandra Paquette to our show today, a Prison Radio Show. We're very happy to have you. Alexandra Paquette comes to us from Quebec, and she's been a practicing lawyer there for 5 years. She has an impressive practice of prison law. And not only does she practice in Quebec, but because the criminal system is federal, she's able to practice all throughout the country, so in all the different provinces. And she focuses or specializes on transgender inmates and has been successful in assisting several transgender inmates in moving locations and institutions. And that she made new law when she did that, because the law changed just around the time when she started to get going with her practice. And so thank you so much, Alexandra, for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Today, Alexandra is going to speak with us as the legal representative for Christoph Lewis. So on our show, we've talked about Christoph before, for any of our listeners who have been following the story. And so we're going to talk a little bit about where Christoph's case is now. There was an incident where Christoph was abused and assaulted by guards inside a prison. And we're going to discuss with Alexandra more about the details about where the case is. But just for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with what happened, would you be able to give us a summary?
Yes. So in November 19, 2012, so we're talking about more than 10 years from today. Christoph was incarcerated at Milevin Institution, which is in a province of Ontario. It's a maximum security. And after a regular visit, nothing, you know, particular happened during this visit. He was asked for a search. So, you know, he complied and went to the search room. And for some reason, which is not clear, still not clear, you know, the situation escalated. And you see in the video, there's a lot of officers. We're talking about more than 10 officers that are just, you know, rushing in the area where he is. And during the whole process, you know, Christoph is compliant. He's not showing any aggression, any type of angry behavior. And for some reason, like I said, he's actually pepper sprayed. And then some of the guards just, you know, grab him. And well, the incident led to Mr. Lewis, you know, being put on the ground. And that was a very traumatic experience for him. And I mean, the whole situation maybe, you know, happened for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. It was very, very fast, but still, in my opinion, what is the most shocking thing is that during the whole, incident, Christoph is not doing anything. You see, we can't hear anything because it's only a video recording. We can't hear the audio, but you see him talking, there is no sign of, you know, angry behavior, which is very, and the response from our correctional services officer is pretty shocking because right away you see the pepper spray and then the choking happened. So that, yes, that's very surprising, you know, surprising reaction from the correctional officers. That's for sure.
Right. So thank you for mentioning also the chokehold, because I know that was mentioned in, you know, some reports about what happened. And so that's what happened when he was, I think that it impaired him from being able to breathe. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And so for our listeners today, we're going to put up on our Twitter and our Prison Radio Twitter and Prison Radio WordPress accounts a link to Toronto Star article that will have a link to the video for anyone that hasn't watched it. But I do want to put a little disclaimer of discretion that it could be triggering. There is violence in the video. And so I just wanted to put that out there. As well, there's a racial dimension to this because Christoph Lewis is Black. And I believe that most of the prison guards in the video, I couldn't really see all of them exactly and be sure, but it looks like the most of them are white.
Yeah, that's because I was going to say, I'm not quite sure if they're all white, but for the most majority of them, yes.
Right. And so this could be triggering too for anyone who's experienced this kind of violence from institutional, like law enforcement officers and as a person of color. So I wanted to put that out there that we will put the link on, but then sort of watch it at your own discretion. And so if we could talk a little bit about now, the great thing is that, you know, that there's video and Christoph was able to get this video, because I think a lot of things happen in prison all the time, as I'm sure you are much more aware than I am, as you practice this kind of law and you're constantly dealing with inmates and people that are, you know, confronted by all kinds of things that are happening inside that the rest of the world can't really see. So how did Christoph get access to the video? If you could talk a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so like you said, a good thing is that there's camera everywhere. Well, mostly everywhere in all the federal and provincial institution. And it's mostly to, you know, make sure that there's a transparency from the correctional service, but also to make, well, it helps to maintain, you know, peace inside the institution, and if something happens, to investigate. So, and it's only a video recording. You can't hear what they say. So how to have access to it, how it works, once something happens, you can ask to, well, first of all, you have to make sure that the video is preserved, because otherwise it would have been recorded they record over the old recordings if you don't ask for it. But in Christoph's case, because there was a use of force, correctional service had to save the recording to make sure that the correctional investigator, which is like a third body, can investigate. So that's just make sure that the video recording is saved. It doesn't give him access to it. So in order to have access to it, you have to file a request at the Access of Information under Access of Information Act. And that takes forever. In the act, you say you see a period of 30 days, if I'm correct, to have the answers. But I'll be very honest, sometimes you could wait 2-3 years before having an answer. So that's why it took a long time for Christoph to have access to the recording in itself.
Right. And so the article with the link in it from the Star that you shared with me came out in 2021. And so I'm thinking, that did it take that long from 2012 to 2021 to get access to the video? I mean, perhaps.
It took at least, I think Christoph got the video in 2020, if I'm correct. I'm not sure about that information, but it for sure took more than 3 to 4 years. Right. Yes, exactly.
Okay. And so thank you for clarifying that. That's really interesting to know that when there is a use of force, that they have to keep that part of the video. And that's really good that it's not recorded over. It's really important, especially. And that's a nice segue into just talking about where we are today. And so I know that how we weren't got in touch is that there's been some developments in this case. So I was just wondering if you could bring our audience, our listeners, up to speed and to let us know what's happened. And
yes. So I'll start by explaining, you know, about the grievance and complaint process inside the correctional service. Okay.
Yes.
So when something happens inside a federal institution, an inmate can always file a complaint and then, put the complaint to the higher level, which is first level grievance and then second level grievance. And there's a principle that in order to bring outside the institution a problem, you have to have exhausted all your internal recourses. For example, if an inmate wants to, file a judicial review on a specific matter, he has to have exhausted all his internal procedure before filing it in front of the federal court. So that's what Christoph did. He put a complaint in against, multiple officers, because that's another important stuff is that the case that we're talking today, we're talking only about one officer that got officially charged for what happened. But if you see in the video, like I said, there was more than 10 people involved. So he filed the complaint in, took forever. That's another thing. It takes forever to get an answer. Then that's only the complaint level. So you have to bring it to the higher level. Then the higher level, it takes another 2-3 months to get an answer. So he eventually got an answer from correctional services. And in the answer, what was pretty shocking is that they recognize that at least one officer, used an illegal procedure on him. But so they recognize that they were in fault, but that their behavior was actually because of Christoph's behavior. So, blame the victim, right? So that's what he got from the procedure and internal procedure. So the complaints and grievance procedure. So he got that. He eventually pressed charge, but nothing was really done by police officers. And that's only when he finally got his hand on the video recording that he was actually able to put some kind of public pressure with a lot of supporters to make sure that they would investigate. So that's only after he got the camera footage that we kind, well, he kind of had the leverage, you know, because he had actually footage of what happened. And you clearly see that he didn't do anything physically violent to, well, to make them react that way. So that's when the Crown finally took it serious, in my opinion, and they finally, investigate the situation. So on the 10 to 12 officer, only one officer got officially criminally charged for assault. He had to appear in front of, well, the trial had was scheduled initially in the beginning of this month, so January 5th and 6th, if I'm correct, of January. The first day, nothing happened. There was a new disclosure that happened, that, well, that was shared with the defense attorney, so they postponed it to the next day. Christophe testified on the second day, and the trial will continue on March 2nd. So we'll see. So it's not over yet. It's still ongoing. So that's why I'm here today, not Christophe. So that's where we are right now. You know, we're still waiting. I think that the most shocking thing also is the time, you know. I'm here today after more than 10 years. And as of, even though it's been 10 years, Christophe is still experiencing some kind of trauma. You know, there's PTSD. And unfortunately, he's one of the only one, I would say, that was able to actually get some kind of result, you know, because that type of assault happens daily in federal or provincial institution.
Right. And so I'm curious to go back a little bit. Why was it only one officer that was charged? Do you have any idea, like, what happened sort of leading up to that, or?
No, that's the Crown's attorney discretion, you know?
Right.
And that's once the Crown attorney decide who to prosecute or what charges to prosecute or not, that's their discretion, you know? You can't challenge that.
Right. And so the next dates are scheduled, you said, coming up in March?
Yes. So March, the next date is March 2nd. Right. So it'll be the continuing of the trial. And eventually, we don't know if there's going to be a decision rendered that day. That's what the information we had so far. Christophe testified the last day. It went well. But again, you know, you never know.
Right. And have you ever had a case like this before? I know that you've been doing all sorts of different stuff in terms of different kinds of parole hearings, different movement of transgender inmates to different institutions and things like that. And I was just wondering if you've ever had a case like this, similar to this, where there's this instance of abuse that's happened inside, there's this racial dynamic and layer, there's multiple officers.
It's pretty rare that you see some type of investigation, because usually once you file a complaint, I've been representing clients that wanted to have an investigation done, but because you're talking about police officer investigating on correctional officer, they're pretty, like, most of them know each other. It's not impartial. So it's pretty rare that they actually investigate properly or that they are impartial. I remember I had a client that was incarcerated in Port-Cartier, which is another maximum security, but in the province of Quebec. And he actually, and that's another thing, he was an English speaker. I don't know if you know where Port-Cartier is, but we're talking about Sept-Îles. So maybe one person speaks English there, I don't know. But I know for a fact that in the police department in Sept-Îles, there was one officer that actually spoke fluently English. So just to be able for my clients to meet with the police officer, he had to face like multiple requests because they didn't understand what he wanted. And once the meeting was actually, scheduled and done, no charge were dropped. And, you know, you could, earlier, I said that you can't really challenge a decision from a Crown prosecutor. That's true. But in that specific case, I tried to not put pressure, but at least try to convince the Crown prosecutor to change his mind. He said, you know what, I respect you. I'll re-verify what I've done so far. And even after that, he maintained his position to not press charge. So to answer your question, it's very, very rare that you see a problem that happened inside an institution, be dealt with outside court. Because otherwise, what happens is you file in a complaint through the internal process of grievance and complaint. And then when, by magic, CSC recognized that, you're right, my officer actually did something problematic, but be assured that we dealt it in a disciplinary manner, So that's it. And there's no transparency. You can't ask for the disciplinary action that was actually imposed to the officer. So
yeah, there's no transparency. That was my next question, was if you could request the files from that. So let's talk a little bit about this, because this is interesting. And there's a lot of folks who are inside who are listening to right now and are probably going through this. And so this could shed some light for them just on or perhaps they will call in and tell us more as well, because this show, we're constantly learning from each other and constantly learning from those inside. And so when you do file a grievance, who actually looks at it? So it's not the person who committed the grievance against you, but who within the structure or the institution would be looking at it?
Okay, so the first level, which is the complaint, it's actually against the person that you're making the complaint. So if it's against, a correctional officer or somebody from the health department, it'll be the health department that's going to answer it. Okay, so that's the first level. Then if you appeal it, it's not really appeal, but if you put it in a higher level, which is the first grievance level, then it's the warden, so the head of the institution. Okay. After that, if you're not okay with the decision, then you bring it to the regional level, which that seemed quite easy, but it could easily take more than 18 months.
Okay. The last process or all of those?
No, things? In total.
Okay, awesome. Okay.
Because they acknowledge the reception of your complaint, and every couple of days they send you a letter saying, listen, we're not able to answer you, so we're adding this delay, And especially during COVID time, this COVID argument was like the best one they could come up with, And just to come back with on the, I spoke about the disciplinary action that could be done on officer. You could ask, anybody can ask for anybody's information. However, because of the personal, the access of information, they could deny you because it's, personal information. So technically you can, but you're going to face an exception.
Yeah. Right. So once you get to the regional level,
yes,
the sort of, okay, so that's
okay. So once you get to the regional and national level, then you have exhausted your recourse, right? So that's only then that you could bring the problem outside in front of the federal court. And if we're talking about a federal institution, there is one exception. There's a case law, I think it's in 2007, that actually says that if it's an emergency or such an important problem, for example, for my transgender clients, I don't have to go through the whole grievance and complaint process because the issue is so important that could justify to not go through the internal process. Okay. But the principle is you have to go through the whole process before going in front of the federal court. And once you go there, you file a judicial review at the federal court, then you finally have access to a lawyer, because correctional service are represented by the Attorney General of Canada. They're lawyers, they're easily to talk with, which is, it changed everything, really. Because for a lawyer, it's actually the first time in the whole process that your opponent, if I can say, but the other party is represented by a lawyer. And right. It makes a total difference.
Huge difference. No, I've, yes. Yes, no, I can just understand what you're saying. I completely understand, just in my own legal practice. When you're working against the other side is, someone working for the system as opposed to a lawyer, it makes a huge difference.
But it's not only because of the legal, problem. It's just that they're able to, they're more detached. And they don't have this, the mentality of CSC, because I'm not going to go there, but I just say that it's very conservative. So
very conservative. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. No, for sure. That's really enlightening. And so do you know when Christoph first started the process? Like, this incident took place in 2012 in Millhaven. Did he start a process right away? Like, or was there a little bit of lag in time? Because it seems like now that's so many different levels to get through. So I can see why it probably took a long time, and then it took time to get the video and then to get everything going. But you might not know offhand, but I'm not sure in case you do.
I actually don't know the answer, but just, logically, it would have to have started like a couple of days after the incident.
Right. To keep the video. Well, the video was kept, but for him to.
Yes, exactly. The video, but mostly the complaint, I don't have the exact date when he filed it, but it had to be a couple of days after the incident.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I just want to add that, the most shocking thing in this situation in regards of the complaint and grievance process is that, CSC actually recognized that there was, there was a gesture that was not okay made by the correctional officer, but it was only made because of Christoph's behavior. So when I said blame the victim, that's exactly what it is.
Right. Yeah. They're blaming him. And I find it interesting that only one of them out of all, because when you watch the video, to the wired listeners who will watch the video, you'll see that there are so many, as Alexandra's saying, like at least 10, and that they're all sort of getting in there and getting, violent with Christoph. And so it's amazing to me that only one of them is charged. I find that very shocking.
It is shocking. And, we don't have the audio, but from the amount of officers that were there, I could imagine the amount of noise that, was there at that time, I'm guessing, you could see physically how angry COs are in the video. So I can just imagine the tone of voice. So,
right.
Yeah. That's something that we're never going to know.
Right. And for anyone who's listening who might not know what a CO is, it's just a correctional officer. Yeah.
I'm trying not to use a.
Yeah, it's okay. Acronym. Yeah, you're doing great. This is great. And so thank you so much for explaining this process. And thanks again. I wanted to update any listeners who may have just been tuning in now. We are speaking today about violence inside and about an incident that took place in 2012 with an inmate named Christoph Lewis, who is currently out of prison. And we're speaking with his lawyer, Alexandra Paquette, who's been practicing prison law in Quebec and throughout Canada for over 5 years, specializing in transgender inmates, and has been representing Christoph in this case where, correctional officers one of them is charged. There were several that assaulted him in 2012 inside. There's a video that we're going to share on our Twitter on a link through a Toronto Star article that was talking about this when the video first became available, I think in 2021 or 2020. And we're speaking with Alexandra about where the case is. And Alexandra's been letting us know that there's some court dates coming up in March. And so we're hoping that, that will go well. Christoph's already given testimony. I believe that was in earlier in January, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, the first actual day of the trial, he had to testify.
Right. And Christoph describes himself as a community strategist. He's an activist. He's a writer. He's a youth mentor, a public speaker, an entrepreneur, knowledge seeker, and a father. And he has a foundation. He's the founder of the Freedom is a Must Foundation. And I encourage anyone listening who has access to the internet. I know a lot of our listeners inside don't. But for any of you that do, if you could check out freedomisamust.net. And that's Christoph's foundation. And it would be really great for anyone listening to definitely check that out. And support any initiatives that he has. So just to move further along, I wanted to speak with you about something else that came up in some of our preliminary discussions, Alexandra, just that violence is not really uncommon in the prison system, unfortunately. And I know this is a really unfortunate topic, but it's something really important to talk about, because a lot of things, as we were noting, that go on inside, don't really get dealt with on the outside. And as Alexandra was noting, that this is a rare case, that something like this that did happen inside is being taken up in the court system outside. And so this is important to highlight, but I wanted to sort of hone in on that point, that violence is not uncommon in it. And I know that you also had noted about them in Bordeaux, and when recently about like loss of life, and just in terms of the structural violence of how people are treated in the middle of when everything was really cold and there was a lot of inclement weather, and what happened in terms of power and all the rest of that. If you could talk a little bit about that, that'd be great, and anything else within that.
Right. Yes. So I think, and that's the saddest part, is that media are only talking about that if there's a death or something very, very problematic. In Christoph's case, it could have been way worse, the situation. So I think that's another reason why it was never brought up outside of the court, outside of the jail, but like you said, violence inside, it happens daily. Of course, there's a lot of violent offenders, I'm not denying that. However, correctional service know that there's violent, they are violent offenders. And we're talking about offenders that have mental health issues. Correctional service the officers, they have training to de-escalate a situation, they have training, or if they don't have enough training, they should definitely have more training about how to deal with someone that is in crisis in order to not use the force. And when I say use force, it's right away. They're not shy to use pepper spray. They have the spit mask also that they could put on an inmate. Sometimes some of the incident or the use of force, they happen when the offender is handcuffed, so there's no option for that person to some kind of defend himself. So it's very traumatizing for inmates. And, if it's not violent, it's also the way they speak to inmates. I have clients that tell me quite often that they're constantly, being called some type of names. I know you wanted me to speak about racism, but the amount of inmates that are being called multiple names by a correctional officer, it's very shocking. And again, the only thing that an inmate could do is file a complaint you could always file a complaint to the Human Rights Commission. That's another avenue for you, but it takes time, and in the meantime, you're still in contact with this correctional officer. And I spoke earlier about the correctional investigator, which is kind of like the ombudsman of the inmates, or the third body that makes sure that CSC, correctional service, is actually doing their job the right way. And every year they make an annual report. Yes. And after every year, you know, it's the same result. The use of force, well, it's still there, shouldn't be that high, but that not only we still see a lot of use of force, but that Black and Indigenous person are more likely to face use of force during their incarceration. And there's no, like, there's no statistics supporting that Black offenders are more violent than white offender. That's not, it doesn't exist. The no. only reason why we have more statistics with Black offender is because they are, and Indigenous offenders, is because they are more represented in the federal system. That's the only reason. They're not biologically more violent, you know? That's not something that is a...
These are, their communities are over-policed.
Exactly. Right? So that's
they're ending
the
up
only reason.
Yeah, no, for sure. We've definitely looked at some of those issues on our show in the past. And so that's really interesting. So sort of we've talked a little bit about the process and, you know, what that was like in this unusual process and how this has been dealt with and how long it's taken, you know, to get to this point. And then how there were all these officers sort of, you know, in this video, there's proof, there's evidence of it. And then only one of them is being charged, which is also, you know, very rare. And so we talked a little bit about how the violence is not uncommon inside, and there's different kinds of violence, sort of physical violence, you know, the, you know, physical violence by correctional officers, but then also, you know, sort of abuse in terms of the language and how they're being talked to and treated. And then could you talk a little bit about this layer of, yes, like you're talking about the systemic racism against Black and Indigenous inmates. Could you talk a little bit about how Christoph has articulated this to you, or sort of the framework or any experiences or things that he's added in terms of how he feels as a Black man he was treated inside these institutions?
Yes, well, I mean, just after, you know, watching this video, you could see how impressive that is. You know, like you said, you have one offender with against 10 to 12 officers. And that's, you know, this incident happened with, you know, to Christoph, but he was, you know, he suffered from other altercation or other incident. Yes, the fact that he's been, how can I say that? He's been experiencing some type of racism inside, but also in regards of the fact that he's an English speaker. He does understand a little bit of French, but not that much. So being a Black offender and an English offender is also not a problem, but, you know, it makes their life way more difficult than a white French speaker offender. So I remember he told me about a situation that happened when he was in the province of Quebec in a minimum institution, where, you know, he was in charge of the gym. Okay, so he was working at the gym. He had some music on. It was some, I don't know what type of music it was, but it was at not that high, you know. It was you know, it was okay, at least the same volume that another white offender would put the music on at. And right. he's been reported of having some type of rap music way too loud in the institution.
Oh my gosh.
And let's just remind you that the volume of the music was the same as the white offender before him. You know, he was, so it's just to show you that it doesn't just end at physical or verbal abuse. You know, it's just the way CSC acts, you know,
day to day.
Exactly. And I'm just going to give you another example. It has nothing to do with Christoph, but I had another Black English offender, which is the most shocking part is he's actually born in Quebec. Okay, so he's not, like, he's born in Quebec. And so this guy, you know, when you are admitted to the federal system, you can, one of the assessment that correctional services do, they verify if you're part of a gang. Okay, so in this specific case, which has nothing to do with Christoph, in this specific file, he was affiliated by correctional services to a Jamaican gang, something like that, okay? Which was, if you Google Jamaican gang, that doesn't mean anything. So I had to challenge this information. It took forever because remember, you have to go through the whole internal procedure. So in this specific case, I had to go through with to the process with my client. It took over 18 months. It just in order to bring that problem at the federal court level, just for the attorney general to tell me, you know what, Alexandra, you're absolutely right. This gang does not exist. It's like I would have told you that you're part of the French Quebecer speaker. And it took me almost 2 years just to get that. But during those 2 years, this person has been incarcerated in institutions that are for gang members, you know, and we're talking about less programs, less access to, reinsertion programs. So again, that just to show you that CSC's, you know, policies are racist, you know?
Right. Right. The wow. It took 18 months just to get that. Did you get it removed or?
Yeah, we were able to get it removed, but it doesn't erase the 2 years that my client passed, you know, was incarcerated in a gang institution. You know, there was way more violence in those institutions. Like I said, there is less access to programs, which, you know, indirectly impacts your residual liberty, you know?
Right.
And it doesn't help you to be released earlier. Not at all. Right.
Can you talk a little bit? Can you elaborate a little bit on that for those of our listeners that might not understand how programs can impact your parole? And
right. Things? Yeah. So, like I said, when you get sentenced to a federal an institution, you know, you have a full sentence, but you have access to early release, which is called day parole, full parole. And in order to apply, it's not a right, you know, it's a privilege. So you don't have the right to be released your one third of the sentence. It's not a right, it's a privilege. You have the right to apply, that's true, but you don't have the right to be released. You have to, the Parole Board of Canada is the organism that takes care of that. And the main question that the board has to ask themselves, it's whether or not this offender represent a non-due risk for society. There's a lot of sub criteria I'm not going to go over with you today, but the main question is, does that inmate represent a non-due risk for society? And the main way to prove that he's not representing a non-due risk for society is through programs, you know? So I would say something like, you know, the risk is manageable outside because my clients has completed the full program. You know, he went over his risk factor that contributed to his criminality. You know, he learned how to manage his emotion. He learned how to, he had to work, you know, he had to find legal ways to make money. So if you don't have access to program, how can you show the Parole Board of Canada that you changed, that you actually learned the tools enough to reduce your risk in society? So if you don't have access to it,
you're stuck.
And right now, especially during this time in 2023, we speak about lack of staff. That does also impact the inmates' access to program, because if you don't have a program teacher, then the program, you know, they can't follow the program.
And so is there a shortage of staff within the prison system? Is that?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Provincial and federal level. You know,
and that's preventing people from coming out sooner through all these various ways.
Exactly. And not only that, but when we when we're talking about, you know, violence inside the walls, imagine a correctional officer that's been doing 12 hours in overtime. You know,
right.
You could just I know for a fact that when I don't have a good night of sleep, I don't react the same way. So imagine a correctional officer.
Yeah.
It's not to excuse their behavior. It's just, you know, it does bring a little bit of context, you know?
Yeah. It's just like the healthcare system. It's like sort of at the, exactly. at the brinks of, you know, they're pushing the limits. Right. So everything sort of doesn't work properly, right? Exactly. Whatever that means within the context of a carceral institution. But thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would want to add?
Well, I wanted to add that, you know, especially, you know, because I'm here because of Christoph's story, you know, Christoph is a fighter. I'm here after 10 years. During those 10 years, Christoph never stopped, you know, carrying this incident. You know, he experienced a lot of trauma afterwards. He's still experimenting PTSD after this incident. And he just, even if this correctional officer is found guilty, even if, okay, I don't have high hopes, but even if, you know, he just wanted to make sure that his story was heard and to inspire other inmates to do it, to do the same. You know, the more we talk about situation like that, the more we'll be able to make real change, concrete changes. So honestly, and I want to thank Christoph, to be honest, because, you know, being able to be part of his story and part of his legal team, because I'm not the only one. It's just, he's very inspiring. That's for sure. And when he wants something, he's going to get it. It could take some time, but he's very patient. So I know that right now he's been on parole for more than a year, more than 18 months, if I'm correct. He's doing great. And I know for a fact that we're going to hear his name for good reason in the future.
That's great. And yes, I'm also so glad. Thank you, Christoph, for getting in touch with Prison Radio Show so that we could update on your case. And we're always happy to do that. And for any of our folks inside who are listening, if you want us to do updates on your case, if there's stuff going on, please get in touch with us through our listener comment line. And thank you so much, Alexandra, for being with us today. And again, for anyone that's tuning in, we've been talking about Christoph Lewis' case against a correctional officer who assaulted him inside. And Alexandra Paquette is his lawyer who practices prison law in Quebec and has been doing so for 5 years, actually not just in Quebec, but across the country, and specializes in transgender inmates. And please check out Christoph's website at or his foundation that he started called Freedom is a Must. So it's freedomisamust.net. And Christoph's a community strategist, an activist, writer, youth mentor, public speaker, knowledge seeker, entrepreneur, and a father. And definitely instrumental to, you know, really giving life to what Prison Radio Show is, because we're really trying to, you know, give voice to some of the voices that are, you know, suppressed in our society, or folks that are not able to, you know, tell some of their own stories. We're trying to put it in their words. And so that's why we're speaking with his lawyer today. So thank you so much. And we'll hope to have you back after the dates, the further trial dates in March.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much.
From the report of Ivan Zinger, the Office of the Correctional Investigator, these are some quotes. As reported by a staff member, this is on page 61 of the report. There are quotes here, voices of Black persons and CSC staff on discrimination and racism. As reported by a CSC staff member, a Black man laid on the ground asking for medical assistance and one of the correctional officers who approached him began to laugh at him. Look at him, he's choking like George Floyd. His white colleagues laughed. Black individuals reported that it is common for correctional officers to use racist language against them or call them monkeys verbally or by gesturing. One Black person who was following up with a CSC staff member for an escorted temporary absence was asked in the presence of other incarcerated individuals, "So you want an ATA to go to the zoo? Is it to go visit friends?" A group of Black individuals sitting together enjoying a coffee is asked, what was the gang discussion about? What was said today at the gang meeting? As reported by a CSC staff member, having witnessed so many racist comments and behaviors from white colleagues myself, the advice I regularly give to Black inmates is that they must behave in a way that does not serve as an alibi for racists who have power over them, yet they should not be required to be more careful than other inmates. From a volunteer who has been working with CSC in the penitentiaries for over 10 years, Black inmates report to me a lot of racism that they experience. Nevertheless, what I have noticed since I have been in Quebec is that English-speaking Black offenders experience even more racism. As it is as if they have two aggravating circumstances in the eyes of some staff: skin color and English language. And there's also information about the amount of use of force against against Black inmates as compared to others within the prison system. That the amount of use of force is way higher than the percentage of people within, of Black inmates within the prison system. So there's some recommendations. There was a report from 2015 to 2016 by the office. Black inmates represented 9% of the federal prison population and 7.5% of the federal supervised population, although Black Canadians comprise just 3% of the Canadian population. In terms of correctional outcomes, Black persons in federal custody are overrepresented in maximum security segregation or solitary confinement and use of force incidences. And it talks about how if you're Black, there's a higher chance that you'll be placed in a maximum security institution, and that you'll be discriminated against by officers. There are several important items and numbers within this report. And it talks here about the over-incarceration of Black people in Canada. So it says that Black persons represented 9.2% of the overall incarcerated population, despite representing about 3.5% of the Canadian population. And the total number of Black people in federal penitentiaries has decreased by 12.4% since 2012. This decrease should be understood in a broader context, where the total federal prisoner population declined by 16.5% over the same period, and the number of white individuals decreased by 23.5%. For this investigation, Black refers to those identifying as Black, Sub-Saharan, African, and Caribbean, self-reported racial and geographic categories used by CSC. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show is a twice monthly news show on CKUT FM, CKUT.ca. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, police, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Rivière des Prairies Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave us a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside. You can check out our past episodes of Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. And Prison Radio Show is a podcast as well, so you can check out episodes of the PRS podcast on Libsyn or anywhere that you get your podcasts. Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m.
T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing you a wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked into CKT 90.3 FM.
Yes, sir. Jules, all up in your earpiece. I got some new for you. Richie Evans and Vito for you. If you rocking with it, bang my line. Let me know. 623-242-TEI.
That we can't iron out. I'm on a different type of level in life. I'm on that upper echelon, I'm trying to make you a wife. It's a secret society, all we ask is trust. Respect is everything, and loyalty is a must. My name, whole weight, gotta move different. Put the rock on your hand, that's a cool